Good morning, and morning everyone online watching as well. Really excited about what we're going to be doing this morning, although it may not be what you're expecting. So I'm just going to give a little bit of a warning here. So we're going to be talking a little bit about the issue of pornography this morning. And so if you have got some little ears around, you might want to be aware of that. I think most of the kids have now gone out to kind of the kids' program. But if that was something you weren't expecting or you wouldn't want them to hear, then, you know, that's just a little warning for you. Let me introduce myself before we get started. So my name is Ian, as you've heard. I'm a church warden here at St. Philip's. I don't know how many churches this morning have got church wardens preaching on porn. I reckon we might be the only one in the UK. We could do some research, we could find out, but that's going to be good. And yeah, as you've heard, part of my life, part of my job is I work for this organisation called the Naked Truth Project. And what we're going to do, actually, if we could get the stuff on screen, that would be great right now. I'm going to ask you just to get your phones out. And you can do this at home, or you can do this here. And throughout the morning, we're going to be doing some sort of different things with phones and some of the slides, some of the presentations. And we're also going to do some votes and things like that. So, yeah, that's brilliant. Thank you. Now, I don't know whether you have heard of the Naked Truth Project. Now, on your on the screen, you should be able to see a code, potentially. My eyesight is terrible, so I can't see. There you go. Thank you. Look at that zooming in there. So you need to go to a website called menti.com, and then you need to put in that code, which is, I'll read it out to you, even though, as I say, my eyesight is terrible. Make that larger again, please. Or someone who can see can shout it out. There we go. So you need to put in, when it asks you for a code, you need to put in 3429343. Thank you. And then that will hopefully take you through to what we're going to need for this morning. And as I say, you can do this at home as well. Open up a different tab on a browser, or if you're watching YouTube, on a browser, or maybe just kind of do it that way, but that will be great. And let's kind of keep the that on the screen, if that's okay, that presentation. Just keep that up the whole time. Because what I want to know is if you've ever heard of the Naked Truth Project. So we've been around for about 8 years or so, something like that. And if you have, then you'll get an option to press a thumbs up or a thumbs down on your phone. So if you have, you can kind of press thumbs up. If you haven't, then press thumbs down, and then we'll kind of get to see how many of you. There we go. That's brilliant. We'll just kind of keep that up there for now. But as I said, Naked Truth it aims to do two things. We aim to open eyes and free lives from the damaging impact of pornography. And this morning we're going to talk a little bit about why that's important. We're going to talk a little bit about what impact that might mean for you, and also just some of the work that we are doing. But I'll be really honest with you. I didn't think I was going to start a porn project. You know, I didn't sit down with my careers advisor when I was 13 at school and sort of say, yeah, this is what I'm dreaming of. And it just wasn't part of the plan. In fact, I probably thought the thing I was going to be doing as an adult was something to do with art. And when I was, kind of doing my GCSEs and A-levels, I thought I was probably going to go to art college. That was kind of what I thought. And I've always enjoyed art. In fact, even when I was in nursery, I remember kind of art being the highlight of my day. Now, this was partly because when I was at nursery, I think that's all we ever did do. I don't ever remember being taught any numbers or letters or anything like that. I just remember us walking in to nursery classroom, and we'd all sort of sit down on those tiny little chairs that you have when you're in nursery, and the nursery teacher would go, okay, everyone, what we're going to do today is we're going to do some, and it could have been anything, you know. It could have been quantum physics, it could have been anything, but it never was. It was always painting. And that's what we did every single day. We did some painting. And I remember quite clearly that what would happen is in our nursery, we had these little easels where you would sort of stand on one side and your friend could stand on the other. Do you remember that? Do you remember having those? Maybe that was just my nursery. And then the teacher would come round and she'd give us some paint, squirt it onto a paper plate for us. And I would begin the process of considering what I would be creating that day. I'd be thinking about composition, I'd be thinking about perspective, I'd be thinking about, you know, the deep meaning behind what I would do, and then the art would start, because I would take some paint, and it would be on my brush, and I would go, Ian. That was a hard day's work for me at nursery, and then I would take my picture at the end of the day, and I would go and meet my mum, who would pick me up from nursery. And now, as a parent, as a dad, I now realise how much of a saint my mother actually was, because she never let on. She never let on that this was actually an incredibly boring process for her, because I would kind of, you know, run to meet her, and she would stop me and go, "Hello, what have you done today?" And in her head, she's thinking, well, painting, because that's all he ever does every single day. There's nothing else going on in this nursery. That's all they do. And I would say, painting? And she'd go, "Ooh, that sounds exciting." As I say, saint. And then she would say, "Okay, let's have a look." And I would show her this painting that I'd prepared. And I'd folded it whilst it was wet. So before it was pretty bad. But now as I kind of peel it open, it's like... And I show her this thing. And all I can say is it is a mess. It is terrible. It looks like vomit on sugar paper. It is just... There is nothing artistic, nothing distinguishable. It is just terrible. And my mum would kind of look at it with a big smile on her face and a slight tilt to the head. And she'd go, "Oh, that's good, isn't it? So, what is it then?" And then I would tell her, you know, "It's you," or something. And she'd be, "Oh, great." But my mum, the saint, she would take these pictures and she would put them all around the kitchen. She would kind of have these fridge magnets and stick them on. And she didn't seem to mind, you know, she didn't seem to mind that when her friends came round for a cup of coffee or something, they'd look at these pictures and think to themselves, maybe Ian's musical. You know, they didn't seem to worry about that. And yet all she could see is mess. That was it. She could just see this kind of mess on paper. All her friends could see is mess, really. That's all there was to be seen. But for me, it was slightly different, because every time I walked into the kitchen and I looked at these paintings scattered around, I could see more. I could see the rocket ship, the portrait of my mum, the spaceman, whatever I'd had in mind, I could somehow see something more. And we've been, over the last few months now, I think, actually, or certainly weeks, we've been using this phrase of a kingdom vision for something. And we've used these different topics and these different ideas, kingdom visions for work and life and stuff like that. And when we came to think about today's topic, we were saying, well, it would be great to do a kingdom vision for relationships, for sex, for something that is actually a massively important part of people's lives. And yet, similar to what Simon was saying last week, as we talked about the issue of race, for example, we also wanted to recognize that this topic of relationships and sex and sexuality, it's huge, isn't it? I mean, it's just huge. It depends so much on where you are, whether you're single, whether you're married, whether you're divorced, whether you're separated. It depends so much on your orientation or sexuality or identity. There's so many things that speak into this topic of sex and relationships. It didn't feel right to try and then talk about all that in one sermon on a Sunday. And so, as we've said last week, we are committed as a church to talk about this topic. We want to do it well, and we want to do it wisely. And so today we are just honing in on this kind of one piece of pornography, but we really want you to understand that actually there is a broader conversation that we want to continue and we'll be having in different ways over the next kind of year or so as a church. But you might still be kind of thinking, well, why are we talking about porn on Sunday? This is just really awkward. Why are we doing it? Okay, so you're going to do a kingdom vision for sexual relationships. But why? Why are we talking about this? Well, let's start there, because I think that is vitally important. And so we're going to start by watching a bit of a video. Don't panic, everyone. It's just Vox Pops. And we're going to be just hearing what people on the street, what everyday people on the street think about this issue of pornography. So you will need to watch this even if you're here in the building on the little screens. I don't think it's going to go on the big screen, but if you're watching it on the video, you should be able to just see it. Here we go.
The first time I watched porn, I think I was 13.
I think when I was about 12. Maybe
13, 14? 15.
I was about 11.
Probably about...
See? 12, yeah.
12, yeah.
I was probably about 10, maybe.
I know, I have loads of friends that watch porn for pleasure.
Of course I liked it. Something new.
It's really easy to find porn now. Just type into Google whatever you like.
I think I was shocked at first because I had never seen anything explicit before.
We've never seen sex.
All my friends watch it and talk about it, and that's been since I was 11.
I think everyone I've dated has watched porn.
Like, we're in a generation now where it is normal. Porn is normal and everyone watches it.
I'd say I'd watch porn probably at least once a day, at least.
There was a stage where I was three times a day, really, three, four times a day.
Three to four times a week, I'd say.
At least once a week, I guess, or something like that.
That's news to me.
I was addicted to it when I first got into it.
Like, come home from school, put porn on.
From there, more porn. It was just escalated.
Okay, so I'd love you to get your phones out again, because one of the things that has drastically changed when it comes to this issue of pornography is the internet. The internet was a game changer. Porn has been around forever, really. But when we were able to have porn on our phones, that seems to have totally changed the ability for people to access it in a way that is totally anonymous. And, you know, so this is the first generation, really, with any time, anywhere access to unregulated content. And so on your screen, hopefully, you should see on your phone a question about how many visits you think one porn site had in 1 year. Okay, so the year is 2019. How many visits, how many views? So that might be the same person going back, but how many visits, how many hits did one website have in 1 year? Okay, so we're getting some votes here. Oh, day, sorry, this is day. Yeah, day, thank you. So if you can just keep that up on the screen for me, guys, that would be great. Just for a second, appreciate YouTube people. So these are the live results and some interesting ideas there. But let me just put this into context for you, just because these are big numbers, because we've got, you know, millions of people. The England-Denmark game had 27.6 million people watching it. And apparently that is the biggest audience that one channel has ever had for a football match, okay? So 27.6 million people watching that one football match. This website, every day during 2019, 115 million people visiting this one porn site. So one of the things that we need to appreciate is that even if you're sitting here watching or listening now as someone who perhaps has never looked at porn, actually the culture we live in, the society we live in, as you heard through those Vox Pops as well, porn has become normal and it is well and truly in the mainstream in terms of kind of web life and traffic and all that sort of thing. In fact, Ofcom, they released a survey last month where they were looking at online behavior of all kinds during the pandemic, in particular the month of September, so last September. And during that time, they found that one in two, 50% of UK adults looked at porn during September during the pandemic. And that wasn't actually full-on lockdown, was it? I was just thinking about that. That was, obviously, we were in tears and things, but it wasn't even like full-on lockdown. But during September, 1 in 2, 50% of UK adults. I heard another statistic the other day as well, which I think is really relevant for us, where 1 in 3 uni students said, as they were being interviewed in their first year of uni, 1 in 3 said that they gained more education from pornography about sex and relationships than they did from any other place, like formal education or their parents or anything else. So 1 in 3 uni students saying, I've learned more about pornography. I've gained my understanding about sex and relationships. I've learned more from pornography than anywhere else. So that's why I want us to talk about this issue, because actually this isn't just something that's happening on the fringes. This isn't just something that some people sometimes are dealing with. It seems like for our culture and our society, and actually, dare I say it, for our church, this is a hugely relevant issue. And that's why it's really important that we talk about it. And behind these stats, like 115 million people a day, or 1 in 2 people in the UK, UK adults, are actual stories, as always, aren't there? There are stories of brokenness. There are stories of addiction. There are stories of relationship breakdown. There are stories of exploitation and coercion within the porn industry. There are stories of real lives and real people. And it actually, when you start hearing some of those kind of stats, when you start to consider some of those stories, it's not difficult for us to see mess, to see confusion, to see just, you know, a whole load of mess everywhere. But the question is, can we see more? Can we see more? I actually believe God does see more, that God does have a kingdom vision. He has a kingdom vision for relationships and intimacy and connection and, yes, sex. He has a vision for these things. And you know what? It is so much more than the kind of anemic, hollow, papier-mâché version of intimacy and sex that porn offers us. And so we as Christians, we actually sometimes struggle with this idea, don't we? We kind of struggle with the idea that God might have a lot to say about sex. We've not always got a great reputation of talking about sex. Maybe you're watching this as someone who isn't a Christian and you've already begun to think, well, what, there's a surprise. Christians don't like porn. What a surprise, because everyone knows Christians don't like sex. But actually, I just don't believe that's a helpful way of seeing God's view on this, because the truth is, you know, it would be like saying just because Jamie Oliver is campaigning against junk food that he doesn't like food. It's nuts. We know that Jamie Oliver is passionate about food. You only have to spend 2 minutes watching him make something, you know, when he's doing one of his recipe shows and everything is pucker and smells amazing and looks gorgeous. You know he loves food. And yet at the same time, this guy knows that the world of food has so much more to offer than just like, you know, some KFC. And so actually his campaigning is not because he is trying to minimize what food is, but actually he has a vision of something that is more. And I totally believe that should be the church's posture when it comes to sex and relationships and intimacy too. That the reason we look at something like pornography and say, look, this isn't enough. This isn't good enough. Because actually God has a vision that is so much more than this. A pope actually put it this way, and if you look at your screens, and we could have this on the screen, that would be great. He put it like this. He said, the problem with pornography is not that it shows too much, but it doesn't show enough. And that, I think, it really sums up what we want to try and grapple with this morning. And so I remember when God started to stir my heart about this issue of pornography. And it actually began when I was reading Proverbs chapter 9. I know that's a little bit of cliche. Who can, you know, didn't start a porn charity when they read Proverbs chapter 9? I'm sure you all did. But I basically was reading this chapter in the Bible. Now, Proverbs is an interesting book because so much of it is poetic rather than literal. And so you have to kind of think about it as using imagery and metaphor and that sort of thing. And so it starts, Proverbs chapter 9, describing this character. And there's two characters in Proverbs 9. And the first character is this character called Lady Wisdom. And it says that Lady Wisdom is preparing a feast, a banquet of food. And so jump onto your phones again, because I would love to know for you what a feast really looks like, okay? For you, if someone was to prepare a feast, what's it going to be? Is it going to be a meat feast? Is it going to be like a Tudor-style kind of, you know, like eating meat off the bone with kind of different animals shoved inside different animals? You know, that is your idea of a feast. Or is it like you're a little bit more vegan, perhaps? So maybe it's like sushi, and it's kind of cucumber sushi. I don't know. Or is it chocolate? Is it Willy Wonka's factory with, you know, that land they walk in, and it's like a chocolate river, and you can eat everything? So I want you to vote for me, please, and we'll have a little look on the screen and see what you've voted for. And, at the moment, it's the meat. The meat is winning, okay? That's what we think here at St. Philip's. When we think feast, we think meat. So there you go. And so what it says in Proverbs 9 is that this lady, Lady Wisdom, she prepares this banquet, this feast, and it talks about kind of the best food and the best wine and the best drink. And it is all a metaphor. It is a metaphor for life in its fullness. It's a metaphor for connection with God and with others and with ourselves. It's language actually that Jesus picks up and uses in his parables you might be familiar with. So when he tries to describe what it is to kind of know God and know, and for him to know us, he talks about a banquet and people being invited to that banquet. But he perhaps best sums it up in the phrase that Gareth used in prayers earlier, when Jesus just simply says, I've come to give you life, and life in all its fullness. That is what the banquet is a metaphor for. It is a metaphor for life in all its fullness. And then it says in Proverbs 9 that once she has prepared this feast, she wants everyone to know they get to be invited. There is no distinction. You can come and enjoy this. This is for you. You can know this. This can be your life too. And so she goes and she tries to tell people about it and calls people to come and visit her house and enjoy this food. So this is the first character in Proverbs 9. But there is a second character as well, a character called Folly. And Folly also invites people into their house for food. And Folly's invitation sounds like this. Folly says, come into my house, because food eaten in secret is delicious, and stolen water is sweet. And actually, by this point in Proverbs 9, the metaphor has changed a little bit. Food is no longer a metaphor for life in its fullness and connection with ourselves and God and others. But actually, it's very clear, particularly because of what's been said in earlier chapters, where Folly has overtly been inviting people to have sex, that this metaphor for food is actually about sex. Now, you know, we're kind of used to sometimes connecting food and sex together and stuff like that. But this is what this is about. And so listen to the words again. Food eaten in secret is delicious. Stolen water is sweet. I remember reading those words, and just at that point that I was in my life and some of the things that God was speaking to me about and showing me, thinking, yeah, that sounds a lot like pornography. You know, the power and pull of pornography, so much of it is about that secrecy, what happens in the shadows and in the darkness and in secrecy. But also this idea of actually the intimacy and the connection that people consume when they're watching pornography is stolen. Stolen water is sweet. It's someone else's intimacy that's been taken and presented to you as a product. But if you read on in Proverbs 9, you'll see that it says that she makes this invitation to anyone who will listen. And then it says, but what her guests do not know is that in her house, in Folly's house, is the realm of death. And this is, of course, true of pornography too, that although there's this enticing invitation, there's actually consequence. But death, I mean, death sounds a little bit kind of harsh, right? Death sounds like, come on, really? Death? But actually, I have seen it. You know, I've seen marriages die. I've seen future ambitions and hopes and ministries die. I have seen relationships die. I've seen faith die because of pornography and the impact it can have on people. So actually, maybe death isn't too strong a word. But Jesus, before he said, I have come to give life and life to the full, he talked about a thief. He said, the enemy comes, the thief comes to kill, steal and destroy, but I have come to give you life and life to the full. So even if death feels too strong a word, maybe theft is a better word for you. How does porn rob us? How is porn robbing our society? How is porn robbing us as people? Because without question, there is this kind of two-sided element to pornography. There's what you kind of see, and then there's kind of what the reality is. And so, for example, I know that porn robs people physically. You know, science is showing us more and more that online pornography can impact the way our brains work. It's a super stimuli for the brain. And so actually the brain gets rewired and can cause addiction and dependency. So I know that porn can rob people of their health. I know that porn can rob people of their relationships, so that actually because of porn, their social anxiety is up here. They feel unable to connect with people because actually when they see people, actually they can't help but see them as objects, as of something to be objectified. And so actually having real connection and relationship becomes really difficult for them because fantasy and reality get so merged. To the extreme of actually relationships breaking down because of pornography. In a survey to divorce lawyers, 56% of the divorces that they had handled cited porn use as a key factor in the breakdown of the marriage. Over half of the divorces these lawyers were working with were saying that porn was a significant part of the breakdown in that relationship. Porn robs us of relationship. It robs people of their freedom. I haven't got time now, but the stories of coercion and exploitation, even trafficking that can be linked to the porn industry, are endless. That website we mentioned with 115 million visits a day, that website last month or 2 months ago now had to remove 10 million videos off their user-generated site because those videos contained coercion, exploitation, or abuse. And so the people actually on the screen, many of them are having their freedom and their rights robbed from them by profiteers in the industry. That it robs people of their faith is absolutely true. And maybe you feel some of that yourself, sitting here listening now. I got a good friend called Bethany who's part of her team, our team. And she was on fire in church, led worship, led small groups. To everybody who met her and knew her, this was someone whose faith seemed to be absolutely, you know, on fire. But she's watching porn every day, several times a day. She is caught up and trapped and by this addiction to pornography that she'd had from being a teenager. She's studying theology at university, and yet porn is still eating away at her life and at her faith. She doesn't see herself as a proper Christian because of her porn use. And so I know that porn can rob people of their faith. I'm going to ask you a personal question now, and it's up to you whether you want to answer this or not, but go on your phones again and see if you have the courage to answer this. It's simply, when did you last look at porn? And of course, no one knows what you've voted or what you've said, but you can see that if you have used porn, you're not alone. You're not alone in this room or online. That this community, our church, We're struggling with this too. And so looking at the screen there, we can see that actually this is something that might be robbing you. This could be robbing you right now. And so for us as Naked Truth, we've kind of got a response to that. There's something that we're trying to do. I would really encourage you to kind of take a look online at some of the things that we're involved in and some of the things that we're doing. Because as I say, this affects men and women. This affects people from the age of probably about 8 to 80. This is so important that you know. I mean, some of the stuff we do is we're working in schools. In the last few years, we've probably seen over 20,000 pupils in high schools talking to them about the impact of pornography on their lives. We work with parents too, trying to equip them and help them have these conversations with their teenagers and with their children. We are working with and equipping churches, and that's a big part of how we're trying to respond to this stuff that's going on. We're trying to work actually in just raising awareness in society as a whole, helping culture and society have a conversation about this, whether it's in a pub or whether it's in Parliament, that we need to be talking about this. For example, the last month I was able to do an interview with Chief Constable Simon Bailey, who is the police lead for child protection. And the reason I was able to do an interview with him about this is because of the sexual harassment that's been going on in schools. And that's being, you may have read a lot about that over the last few months. You might have heard of the website, Everyone's Invited, and you might have heard about some of the kind of rape culture that we are starting to experience in high schools. And here is the police lead for child protection commenting in the media saying the reason for this is because of pornography. Because young people are consuming pornography so easily, it is then actually affecting what is happening in everyday life and in everyday relationships. If you want to see that interview and hear what he has to say, then follow us on social media or go to our YouTube channel and you'll be able to kind of hear what he has to say about it. But it's so, so key. So starting conversation and raising awareness is a big part of what we do. Educating, helping people understand. But the other part of what we do is about recovery. It's a trying to help and offer hope to those that are being impacted by pornography too. Whether they're a user, someone who's struggling with use. And if you go to our website, you'll find that there's programs if you're struggling. Programs you can do without anybody knowing. There's one we have called Control-Alt-Delete, where you literally just go through some videos and you start to deal with this and think this through and start to put some things in place in your life. But also programs which you can do online with others, so kind of group stuff that will enable you in facilitated groups from professionals who've got expert help and tools to help you. And so that's kind of our response as an organization. But what is your response? What can you do? What does it mean for you? How do you pursue wisdom rather than folly when it comes to this issue of pornography? And so in the last kind of couple of minutes, don't worry, I'm not going to start another talk now. I want us to just look at one final passage together. And because I am going to be really brief, I also want to mention this actually. So this, what I'm going to unpack now from Proverbs chapter 4, we've created a Bible plan on the YouVersion Bible app. So if you've got YouVersion on your phone, and that's how you read the Bible, then you want to kind of go into the, you know, plans and search for the plan called Proverbs versus Pornhub. And what I'm about to share with you is just an overview of what that plan is, okay? So you can do that tonight, because you've got nothing else to do tonight, or you can do that over this week, which is probably more likely. And it's just a 5-day plan that looks at what the Bible has to say about how we can tackle this issue of pornography ourselves. Because the passage we're going to briefly look at is Proverbs 4, and I'm going to read it to you. Because this is more of really Lady Wisdom and what she has to say. It says this, Proverbs 4, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk from your lips. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. Give careful thought to the paths of your feet and be steadfast in all your ways. Do not turn to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil. So as I've read this, you're probably thinking, oh yeah, obvious, there you go then. That's what the Bible has to say about pornography. But it is actually. I actually feel that these verses, and there's so many others as well, but these verses give us some really helpful things to bear in mind if we're saying, how do I tackle this issue in my life or in my kids' lives or in my church or in our community? How do we do it? So let me briefly just go over some of those things. The first thing you'll notice it says here is to guard your heart. Guard your heart. And, you know, there's two types of guard in our society. We have bodyguards and we have prison guards. And they have slightly different jobs because bodyguards are about kind of protecting people who are vulnerable. And prison guards are kind of like protecting us from people. That's what prison guards do. And actually, our hearts need both of those things too. There are times when our hearts actually need to be protected when they're vulnerable. And so part of what you will discover if you do this this Bible plan in YouVersion is that there are some ways in which we can sit down and think, when is my heart vulnerable? What are the emotions and the environments when my heart is vulnerable? If staying up late at night with your phone in your bedroom is an environment where you are vulnerable to pornography, then you need to be real about that and do what you can to get rid of that environment by leaving your phone downstairs, perhaps, at nighttime. But maybe there's emotions when you are vulnerable, when you are lonely, when you're stressed, when you're bored. Are those emotions that make you more vulnerable when it comes to the invitation of folly? Is that when you're more likely to pay attention and listen? Identifying that, knowing that will help you guard your heart well. But also, as I say, there's this kind of prison guard which we need to have in our lives as well, where actually we need to recognize that our hearts aren't always trustworthy. The reason you have a prison guard is because we don't trust that prisoners are just going to sit really nicely in their cells and stay there with the doors unlocked. And our hearts, the Bible says, can't always be trusted. In fact, our hearts are called deceitful by the Bible. And sometimes we live in a culture that tells us that if your heart feels it, be true to you. But actually, sometimes your heart is leading you down a path of destruction. You know, I remember someone once said this. They said that the thing about the cross is it's a two-finger salute to the ego. Our ego actually can work against us. So part of guarding our heart sometimes is learning how to say no. And that's something we go into a little bit more detail in that plan as well. One of the ways that our heart deceives us is actually in this next bit of the verse. It's the things we sell ourselves, the things we say to ourselves, the lies we tell ourselves. So I think it's really apt that in chapter 4 it says, avoid all perverse talk, stay away from corrupt speech. That's not just about, you know, effing and jeffing. I think that's actually about the talk we tell ourselves, the things we say to ourselves, the excuses that we make. If you're looking on your phones or you're looking on the screen, you'll see that here's a list of some of the things we might say to ourselves when we are trying to justify porn use. You know, I'm already doomed, I'm already messed up, so I might as well do it again today. Or everyone does this. Or it's not my fault. If only they did more with me, then I wouldn't have to look at porn. That we have so many lies that we tell ourselves. But Proverbs 4 says we need to recognize those things and maybe repent from some of those things, but also replace them with truth. But ultimately avoid corrupt talk. Then it goes on to say this. It says, look straight ahead and fix your eyes on what lies before you. I think that's so helpful for us. I wonder how many of you, even today, as you've got your phone out, have been distracted and ended up looking at Instagram as well as, you know, doing the vote. Distraction is so easy for us. It's so easily done for us. But actually what this reminds us is, well, fix your eyes on something. Fix your eyes on what really matters, what you're really looking for in life. And perhaps if you're single right now, and you're struggling with porn, for example, you might be going, well, yeah, you know, when I get married, then it'll all get sorted. Not true. That's the wrong thing to fix your eyes on. In fact, this quote, I think, can be really helpful. I read this the other day. It says, this is from John Mark Comer. It says, let marriage be marriage and let God be God. Let marriage be for friendship and gardening and sex and family and recreation. And let God be the well of your soul, your source of life. God is the source of my life, not my wife. She's an amazing gift that I don't deserve, but she is not Jesus. And I think sometimes when we think about what am I going to fix my heart on, sometimes we're not even getting that quite right. Because marriage will not solve it. In fact, lots of people we work with in recovery thought that marriage was going to sort it for them because they struggled with porn when they were single. But actually, they just went into a marriage with a porn problem. And so actually, what we need to fix our eyes on is Jesus. He is enough. He is enough for us. And so actually, what we have to be focused on is how can I fix my eyes on him? Finally, it says this in these verses, doesn't it? It says, mark out the path. I find this so, so helpful because here's the truth. We don't just arrive somewhere. We don't just kind of go bing like the shopkeeper in Mr. Ben or like in Star Trek. We don't just appear. We actually have to journey somewhere. We take a path before we arrive somewhere. Interestingly, in Judges 16, it says this about Samson. It says, one day Samson went to Gaza where he saw a prostitute. And he ends up sleeping with this prostitute. But here's the thing. Gaza is 25 miles away from Samson's hometown. And Gaza is where the Philistine headquarters is. He's like public enemy number one. Right, so this is a bad place for him to be going anyway, before he meets a prostitute. But it took 25 miles for him to get there. That's something like 56,000 steps. So here's the thing, he took 56,000 steps in the wrong direction before an actual mistake was made, if you like, for him. And so one of the things we need to recognize, whether it's towards negative choices and regrettable choices in our life, or whether it's the good stuff that we want to see in our lives, that actually we need to recognize there is a path that gets us there. And we need to identify it and be intentional about trying to walk it. So what does that look like? Well, that can look like, if you're struggling with pornography, for example, actually say, I'm going to be intentional about asking for help and working through a program that will give me that support. You know, one of the things we say this is, there are two paths. Cover-up will lead to escalation. If you try and cover up your porn and hide it, in the end, it tends to just lead to it getting worse. But community leads to freedom. That if you take the path of community where you're real and vulnerable and honest with people about your problem, ultimately that is a pathway that can lead to freedom. But it's an intentional, scary path that you have to take. So you might be sitting here as someone who's struggling with pornography, and all I would just say is mark out the path, decide what steps you're going to take next towards freedom, because you have to choose it. It won't just happen. You have to be deliberate. You have to be intentional. So I would really encourage you to take a look at that Bible plan and just work through these things, because actually I think that scripture has got a lot to say to you about how you can start to think about this and tackle this issue. But I'd also encourage you, if you're a parent sitting here going, oh my goodness me, you know, what am I supposed to do? I hadn't even thought about this issue before. We've definitely got stuff for you that you can access and look at. We run parent workshops. We have resources online that you can just access straight away for parents as well. And so I'd really encourage you to be intentional in that. Mark out that path, saying, this isn't just going to go away. As a parent, we need to be intentional about saying, how are we going to get to the place where we can start to talk about this well and wisely with our kids, whatever age they are? Maybe you're sitting here as a partner, someone who is dealing with the pain and the betrayal and the trauma of feeling like your love, the person you committed yourself to, seems to be also struggling with pornography. And what that means for you and the help and the healing that you need to receive, as well as they, is actually something you can be intentional about too. That we've got support for you and groups for you and answers for you, but you have to be intentional. You have to be brave and say, I might need help here. And so what I'd love you to do as a response to this is just decide you're going to think about this week more. And that might mean looking up some of the website stuff. It might mean joining us on socials and looking at some of the stuff we have to say. It might mean talking to someone you know and love and trust and say, look, this is where I am right now. It might mean sitting down with God and saying, show me the things that I need to change. Show me the conversations that I need to have. But let me just finish with this verse. And we know it well, actually. But I just want to kind of read it to us again. You see, the thing about pornography is it's like this pit. It's like a deep, muddy pit. And you can end up in this pit all sorts of different ways. Maybe as a user, you were kind of just messing around quite near the edge and you fell in. Maybe someone dragged you in, pulled you in with them because you're a partner. Maybe you got pushed in by somebody else. But here's what the Bible has to say. It says about God, he lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and the mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. And so what I'd love us to do right now as we come to a close, we're going to sing a final song together as well. And I've spoken longer than we normally would on a Sunday, and I hope you can be patient with me for that. But hey, there's no church tonight, so we kind of used the extra time tonight today. Why don't we just stand together if you're able? And Lord Jesus, we just want to say that we thank you that, first of all, you can lift us out of the slimy pit. For whatever reason we found ourselves here, whether that's because we are feeling like we are crushed and trapped by our own porn use, whether it's the porn use of those that we love, our children or our partners or spouses, that has caused us this pain and hurt and brokenness and fear. Whether actually we have found that we've been pushed into something where actually we've been part of this industry in one way or another. We've made videos, we've uploaded things, we've posted stuff, and we just live with regret and self-hatred because of that. Lord, we know that you do not want us in a pit of pain or hate or shame or guilt or addiction or betrayal or trauma. Instead, you lift us up out of the mud and the mire. And you set our feet on rock, on you. You are enough. You are enough for us. And so I'm not going to ask you to put your hand up. I'm not going to ask you to come forward to receive prayer. I'm not going to put you in a position of kind of embarrassment in that way, but what I am going to say is if you know that's you, you need to receive that truth from God today. You need to hear him say, you can be forgiven, you can be healed, there is hope, there is a rock, that you can have under your feet that is secure and steady and trustworthy. It doesn't have to be like this. There is more. You might only see mess, but I see more. More for you. More for your relationships, more for your future, more for your life than the mess maybe you see right now. I see more because I created you. You're mine. If you know that's you, we're not going to spend hours here, don't worry, but I just want to give you a moment to hear that truth because this is life-changing. What is Jesus saying? And finally, we just pray as well, Lord, that each of us here acknowledge that we have a porn problem. Not because we're users necessarily, but because we live in a culture and a society that is being robbed by pornography in different ways. And so that's our problem. As your people, that's our problem, that we want to see change. We want to see transformation. We want to see your kingdom vision for relationships being a reality in our church and in our community. And so we say, we are here, Lord. Use us. Give us courage. Give us kindness. Help us give what we have in whatever ways to bring change. May we just not accept that that's just how it is. Help us to find with you ways to bring that change about. And so if you feel that God has actually been stirring your heart around that, that you kind of want to almost prophetically through your words and your actions and your prayers bring change to what you see around you. What you see in this generation that's coming up that is just completely saturated in these lies. What you see amongst your friends and your peers and your family. If you want to see change, maybe just right now, just start interceding just for a few minutes. Start praying for change. Praying that God will bring change through us and in supernatural ways, hand in hand. Maybe ask him, what can I do?